Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
I think at the foundation of our economy and our value system is American agriculture. The farmers and ranchers and producers across this great country that work hard every single day to provide extraordinary diversity of product.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack says ag is the foundation of the economy.
I think it's important for us to recognize as a country the incredible contribution that is made by farmers and ranchers and producers that indeed makes our country the strongest and most powerful in the world, one that's food secure, one that creates opportunities for the rest of America to do what it does because it doesn't have to worry about having to feed our family. We just simply have to have a paycheck, allowing us to go to a grocery store and get the benefit of your hard work.
This is Agriculture Today.
So first is that, you know, the election period, the enrollment and election and enrollment period for Arkham PLC is open right now. And so you have until March 15th, you know, to get into the county office to make this, the Arkham PLC election.
Dr. Bart Fisher is a former chief economist at the House Ag Committee, is co-director of the Ag Food Policy Center at Texas A&M on ARC PLC.
We've got a decision tool on our website, afpc.tamu.edu, where you can go in and explore that decision if you want. I will say in some cases, wheat, for example, looks like neither one's going to trigger. Cotton looks like neither one's going to trigger. So, you know, certainly for West Texas, in this part of the world, it looks like neither one of them are terribly promising. Again, it goes back to that point of why we need to see reference price increases, right? But I think the good news is, and my encouragement, my rule of thumb on making this decision, and by the way, it's a one-year decision. You're not making a five-year decision. You're just getting this one, under this extension, you get to make this decision one time for Arkham PLC for the 24 crop year. But my encouragement, my rule of thumb is to start with insurance. You know, start by looking at the area-wide policies. If you're a cotton grower, start by looking at stacks. And if you grow other crops, start by looking at SCO. And look at those first, because the decision you make there affects what's available, you know, between ARC and PLC. So if you take stacks, for example, on your cotton, you can't enroll the cotton base in ARC and PLC on that farm. Or if you took SCO on wheat, for example, you know, you're not going to be enrolling in ARC. So you could potentially go over and enroll in PLC. So all of that gets really complicated. I think the way to simplify it is talk to your crop insurance agent and start with your insurance decision. And I've heard, but prices being what they are, what does that even matter? Well, I mean, cotton, if you look at cotton, for example, the price we're looking at going in, you know, and certainly it hasn't been set yet for the insurance year, but it is very, very similar to last year. And for growers who ended up taking stacks last year, particularly in counties where there was a widespread loss, you know, the payment's going to be, in a lot of cases, more than double what ARC would have been. And so in some respects, you know, yes, we may be in, you know, we may have more water this year for the growing season, and so we could end up with above average crop on cotton. That's certainly the case. But if we don't, if we end up in this, you know, a total loss scenario again, SCO or stacks can drastically outperform the ARC program in Title I. And so start with your crop insurance agent. Start by looking at the area-wide policies is my best advice right now. And then you'll call up our office if you have questions. Our phone number's on the website I mentioned. We've got folks here who will walk you through that election if you need help.
Obviously, that's a choice, but when it comes to writing a new farm bill, will we see new reference prices?
Well, I've had the opportunity to be, I think, in 20 states or so doing listening sessions, and we've had countless hearings up here in Washington, also countless meetings in our offices.
Dr. John Bozeman is ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas.
All of the risk management tools come up immediately. Crop insurance is the basis of that, but always reference prices, making PLC work, making ARC work, making crop insurance work, it all goes together. And that's certainly, I think, one of the things that, you know, it's important to me because it's important to the farm community.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We raise alfalfa hay. We have some wheat that we harvest for hay. We have some permanent pasture grass that we have that we harvest also for hay when the cows, when the grass gets above ahead of the cows. And we also have a few head of mama cows that we have on the farm.
Travis Harris is a New Mexico producer on why he's a member of Farm Bureau.
I serve as second vice president on the state board for New Mexico Farm and Livestock Bureau. Farm Bureau has been a part of my family's tradition forever. I can remember going to Farm Bureau meetings as a kid. I've raised my kids through the Farm Bureau program, but the reason, the major reasons, is it brings us as a group of producers together, and we talk about issues that are pertaining to our agricultural industries. We the major emphasis this year seems like is on promotion and leadership, and I think it teaches responsibility, much like the FFA and 4-H programs do. And the we're also have a lot of time that we spend at the legislature trying to promote beneficial legislation for our industry, working with our legislators and stuff. And we go to Washington, D.C. to try to work on the Farm Bill and any issues that pertain to agriculture. And Farm Bureau plays a major role. And I think we're the largest voice of agriculture that there is of any group.
He recently had the opportunity to go to Washington, D.C.
We have to get out and tell our story. That makes more of a difference to the legislators, to the anybody that's involved in setting policy, is hearing what is actually happening to us as individuals, as actual farm producers. And all of us, all groups have lobbyists and stuff like that and paid staff that goes to these things. But in my opinion, the one-on-one conversations that you may have with your legislature or the staff, most of the time in Washington, you don't get a chance to meet your actual representative. It's usually staff, but they do such a fantastic job of writing your information down and what you're concerned on and how you feel and what you oppose and what you are in favor of. It just means so much to those guys.
Is he optimistic about the 2024 growing season?
If we get good snowfall up north and in southern Colorado and northern New Mexico, and water legislation is one of the top priorities in any area of agriculture, because there's so much information out there that's saying that we are the least efficient users of the water, and there's so much demand from the general public, from individuals that are moving into the areas where everything's booming, everything's growing, all towns are getting bigger, all areas are getting more people, and there's a lot more pressure on the water. But I'm worried that if we don't maintain agriculture and we don't keep producing food and fiber for the nation, we could be in trouble. And so we need to keep our farmers and ranchers going.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Most everything from the Red River to the Rio Grande Valley made average and above average yields.
David Gibson is executive director for Texas Corn Producers.
There were some parts of Central Texas that some of the farmers been on along for several years, multi-generational farms, and they had some of the best deals they'd ever had. So that part of the state looked real, turned out real good. As we look up here on the high plains, real challenging year, a lot of rain early. We had some corn on the North Plains that was never planted due to prevent plant from too much rainfall, which in my 20 plus years of doing this, we've never had prevented planting on the high plains for corn, and especially due to excessive rainfall. Then we followed up through the years. Everyone up on the High Plains knows, with little or no rainfall, excessive heat, and just multiple challenges for the crop that was left in the field. Some of the northern panhandle had multiple hailstorms. So a real challenging year for production, and kind of put us behind below average up here on the High Plains. From a statewide perspective, with the better than expected yields downstate, we still kind of had an average crop for the whole state of Texas as far as corn production this year. Prices, yeah, we had an opportunity, a lot of growers did. The futures on corn for December hit a high of about $6.60 a bushel. And by harvest, we were below $5. So a lot of opportunity through the year to lock in some good prices, and a real challenge if you didn't by the time we got to the end of December in selling this year's crop.
So for a corn deficit state, what does 24 look like?
Yeah, within the next 3 weeks, we'll have our first corn going in the ground down in far south Texas. And we are looking at prices well below what we were last year. Even with our current situation, we kind of have a positive cash basis most everywhere in the state now, which is kind of unusual, but part of that's transportation issues and just some general supply issues as far as not having to bring in the extra corn it takes in Texas for use. So I've kind of got a chance to lock in and have several chances here to be looking at $5 cash corn, maybe a little more for 24. I'm just real challenged to feel that we're going to have the highs that we had any time last year for our growers to look at in the market. We hear mixed bag, mixed results of what's happening in South America, what's happening in China. Some of those countries, even China at one time, predicted they were going to have a record corn crop and record supply, but they've actually been in the market a lot here. It's the first of the year. It's like they're saying one thing, doing something else. So just a lot of unknowns. But in general, we had a big crop on a national basis, and we keep seeing revisions to what actually was grown this past year. Looks like we're going to be kind of be under pressure all year unless some type of severe weather issues break out kind of in the heart of the Corn Belt, especially for our domestic production.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
Well, we're certainly working very hard to make that a top priority.
Talking about the Farm Bill. Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee from Arkansas, John Bozeman.
That is my attitude. I know Senator Stabenow also is very, very concerned about us getting this done. So we're working, as you know, farm bills aren't about Democrats and Republicans. It's trying to get the regions of the country to get the different commodities lined up. And again, we're just in a really kind of a generational change right now because of inflation, the high interest rates, all of those kind of things, high input cost. And then as everybody I've talked to has said that probably commodity prices are going to go down. So that's, you know, those are warning signs for our farmers. What we've got to do in the Farm Bill is make sure that we give them the risk management tools to handle all of that. And so it's complicated. And then we've had all of the things that have gone on in the House. We've had trouble passing our appropriations bill. So there's been a lot of things, a lot of priority things that have come up that simply have to be passed. We were blessed. We were able to get an extension without any problems at all. That was, you know, everybody working together. I was really pleased with that. I know that Senator Stabenow also was very pleased with the effort that was made in that regard. So our farmers are in good shape through the, you know, till the end of the year. But we've got to give them the certainty that they need going forward.
One component for cotton producers is the stacks program.
Well, I hear a lot of comments from people that grow cotton, and Stacks, you know, is helpful. None of our programs are working the way that we'd like right now because of this big reset that's gone on. So we'll be looking at that. We'll be looking at all of these types of programs and seeing how we can improve them to make them better work for our farmers, our producers.
And one title of that farm bill deals specifically with rural development.
No, rural development is so important. If you look at our states, usually about 25% or so of the economy is usually number one in our states, many of them. In Arkansas, it's 25% of the GDP number one. That would be true in Michigan. It'd be true in Missouri, probably 40% in the Dakotas. So it's really important. But if you get outside of any town of any size, it's not 25%. It's probably 85 or 90%. It's all that's left in rural America. We've lost our manufacturing. Hopefully that's going to start to come back a little bit. And I think there is a trend there. But in rural America, agriculture is all that's left. So the making sure that our farmers are successful, not only does that make it such that we continue to have this blessing of having the cheapest, safest food supply of any place in the world, but also it truly is all about rural America in the sense of helping that go forward. 53% of our counties lost population in the last census, and you start losing population, then you lose turn back dollars, and you don't have anything to begin with, and you just dig yourself deeper. So, yeah, there's a number of things in the farm bill that are so important, and certainly the rural America part is critical.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We have to be mindful of the implications of an aging population on many levels.
Dr. Jared Bernstein chairs the White House Council of Economic Advisors.
One is in terms of supporting our seniors, and they're some of the most important areas are, of course, going to be Medicare and Social Security. That takes us to our budget. We have a deep obligation at the president's behest to make sure those programs stay solvent, stay healthy, no benefit cuts, making sure people get the retirement support they need. Now, one of the things we've tried to do is significantly lower the cost of health care. And that has two benefits. It lowers the cost of prescription drugs, insulin, people spending hundreds of dollars a month on insulin. That's now capped at $35. Same thing with prescription drugs in terms of having a cap on there. That helps consumers save money, seniors in particular, but it also helps the budget. And that helps the sustainability of these important programs. Look, that said, in terms of the workforce, yes, we need our workforce to continue to improve its productivity. And thankfully, the numbers have been supportive there as well. But that's an important dynamic that you raise.
But agriculture relies on trade. What's that look like for the rest of this year?
The idea, I think, here, or the goal here, and especially talking to a more agriculturally oriented audience like yours, Tony, is to make sure we continue to have robust exports. Now, for farmers, a lot of times that implies logistical issues. We know that back in 2021, we had massive supply chain snarl-ups. Farmers couldn't get their goods to market. That means they couldn't get them out of ports into the global economy. We worked very hard with the private sector to unsnarl those supply chains, and they have stayed unsnarled. Now, as we speak, and as you well know, there are conflicts going on in this world, serious geopolitical tensions. I'm talking Russia, Ukraine, and of course, Israel, Hamas. And there's been activities in the Red Sea, and that has implications for supply chains as well. Thus far, that impact has been quite limited. So I think one of the most important things we can do to continue robust exporting of our agricultural goods is to keep those supply chains flowing, to avoid any of those kind of maritime parking lot situations that plagued us in 2021. And that's very much a goal of ours because it's very consistent with downward pressure on inflation.
So maybe it's all about finding the right niche. Dr. Jim Mentert is director of the Center for Commercial Ag at Purdue.
The two daughters in particular said, we think we can expand this melon operation pretty significantly. And they did it in stages. They started doing it when they were in college, and they expanded it over time. They're working with some large retailers. And then once they did that, they said, you know, why stop with melons? So then they started looking at other produce crops that they could grow. And not only were they growing tomatoes out in the field, but they were growing tomatoes in the high tunnels, shooting for those high-priced early season tomatoes that you can sell for $5 a pound as opposed to maybe a buck and a half a pound later in the season. Then they thought maybe we could have a retail operation that goes with this, and they'd always had a farm stand at the farm, but they decided maybe we need to take this a little closer to people. So they had something off the farm in town, and then they said, even though we're in a semi-rural part of Indiana, maybe we could get into the food delivery business as well. And so they started that. Over time, they've been able to dramatically expand the operation in terms of gross revenue and net income. They haven't added that many acres.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You have to kind of see some signs first.
Looking for optimism in 2024, President and CEO of Cotton Incorporated, Barry Worsham.
First one will be, you know, that we see that global economic growth begins to maybe accelerate from where the current projections are, which is about borderline around 3%, which is on a global basis, that's a low number. So we have to kind of begin to see that first. And in the U.S., I'd like to see, you know, that sales numbers in apparel and home textiles, at least for a month or two, exceed expectations, and that will change the retailer mindset. We don't have the Christmas numbers yet, but at some point, when we see that, then we can become a little more optimistic. But we kind of have to see the numbers first. The prices, as you know, are not great. I think cotton right now is about 80 cents on the new crop. If you're looking at December 24, and that's not a good price right now given the costs. And so we'll have to see that price rise to begin to try to attract some acres back into cotton.
Great hockey player Wayne Gretzky once said, you skate to where the puck is going. Is that true?
I think it explains even more than that. I think it explains, you know, as we work as an organization and as even growers thinking about the future of all the crops, but let's just focus on cotton. You've got to know what the market is going to want and what the environment is likely to be like. And I'm talking about the overall environment, of economic environment and political environment and, you know, all of that. And we know, for example, that sustainability is going to continue to accelerate in terms of, or increase in terms of importance. Brands and retailers not only want things, quote, sustainable, whatever the specific definition may be, but they also want it verifiable. That's one change that has certainly happened over the last several years and will continue to increase in terms of its growth. The second that's more recent has been traceability, that brands and retailers want to know, have to know in some cases, where the product is coming from. And it's a challenge for cotton because, you know, most food crops are not blended. But if you want to know where your shirt, what the ingredients of your shirt, most cottons around the world are blended. So it could be U.S. cotton. It could be some Indian cotton in there. It could be some, you know, Brazilian cotton or even Chinese cotton. And the difficult thing for in the U.S. right now is the government is, with the Uyghur Forced Labor Prevention Act, is really cracking down on any kind of products coming into the U.S. in cotton that has any connection with the Western China or the Uyghur population. So that has made it imperative for brands and retailers to really know where the cotton is coming from. So you combine sustainability with traceability, and now they want to know what happens at the end of the life, which is, you know, we don't want to throw stuff in the landfill. They want to know about biodegradation and does it create problems for water, and all of those things are important, and they're going to continue to be. So it's, on the one hand, it's kind of a challenge for the cotton industry to get all this lined up, but more importantly, I think if we have an advantage finally over some synthetics. We can't compete with synthetics on price, but we can compete on sustainability and even circularity, because cotton is a natural fiber and it does biodegrade, and it, you know, creates its own seed, and there is a circularity to that. So that's what's coming, and I don't see any of those things going away anytime soon. And so that's both a challenge and an opportunity for growers.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
What might be among the farm-level top stories of 2024? One might be the continuing efforts of growers to implement practices and models addressing climate concerns. Purdue University economist James Mintert says a recent survey indicates one out of four growers made or were making operational changes associated with climate, with the scope of changes ranging from cover crops to capital improvements such as tile drainage.
They're starting to make some changes. And the changes they're making are pretty much across the board. They're using some technology that they can purchase every winter or every crop season, and they're also looking at making some longer-term investments.
He adds producers also acknowledge high input costs as a concern, especially in these contexts.
Producers are concerned about a cost-price squeeze, but maybe different than some prior periods is that they are way more worried about input prices than they appear to be based on the risk of lower crop and livestock prices.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.